Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, recovering homeschoolers. A website makes public the stories of people educated in the first wave of evangelical homeschooling, many now criticizing what they call an extremist and abusive subculture. Plus, the periodic table grows. We'll hear about scientists researching and naming new super heavy elements. But we begin with what may be an unforeseen casualty of the Boston bombings, the police scanner. Soon after the first shots were fired, shortly before midnight on April 18th, curious, concerned people began tracking the dramatic killing of one Boston Marathon bombing suspect and the tense manhunt for his younger brother throughout the night. Many watched and listened through online streaming and social media. Others followed the intense action on Boston police scanners. Some 150,000 people were tuned in to online scanner feeds during peak traffic, and then it stopped. Early on Friday morning, the company running a widely used free online scanner app decided to pull the plug. Tim Murphy, reporter for Mother Jones' D.C. Bureau, wrote about that decision, what it means for police scanner transparency. Tim, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
So how were police scanners broadcast to the public, both after the bombings and, of course, during the manhunt?
Well, they were using for the most part, I think there were about 150,000 people listening in on the Boston Watertown police scanners sort of at the height of the manhunt. And most people were listening in online. There are a number of services that you could use. And at a certain point, the Boston police and Watertown police and all the law enforcement agencies decided that it was sort of becoming counterproductive, that folks were starting to kind of parrot everything they heard on the scanner, whether or not it was actually true. You know, there's a lot of just kind of speculation going on, like any sort of forum like that. And so there's a lot of pressure on folks to not, you know, tweet out, to not, you know, sort of blog about what they're hearing on the scanner. And ultimately, sort of the major scanner company decided to just take off the Boston scanner from its homepage at that point.
So I've spoken to several people who were listening during the day on Friday after that decision were made. They were just using other means, I'm guessing.
Yeah. You could still find it somehow, but the main service provider, Broadcastify, decided that they didn't want to draw any more, you know, traffic than, you know, folks who really wanted to find it.
Several municipalities have decided to encrypt scanner feeds to prevent public access, including Washington, D.C., which is your beat. So why? What's the rationale?
Well, they mostly do it in response to sort of, you know, major events like the one in Boston, you know, always on a smaller scale. But, you know, essentially what happens is there will be something, you know, like in the city of Phoenix, for instance, which now encrypts about 18% of all police communications. You know, they had a police chase in which the press actually got to the suspect's house before the SWAT team did.
Wow.
And that precipitated, you know, the suspect taking off and, you know, another hour or so of you know, the police manhunt. And so in response to that, they decided, you know, the press really shouldn't have the information in real time, or the suspect really shouldn't have the information in real time, so we're going to put that behind the encryption.
So, yeah, that's one case. But, I mean, what strengthens that? Is it really dangerous to cops to be in these places? Is it dangerous to investigations if their locations are being tweeted?
Well, that's the argument that they made, and that's certainly the argument that the Boston PD made, that, if, you know, if you're tweeting out that, you know, there's a cop in your front yard and he's sort of undercover or something like that, obviously that's counterproductive, provided, you know, that the suspect is listening in on the radio. The point that the Phoenix PD actually made, which I thought was interesting, was that it's also dangerous to the police department because, you know, they're using this as just kind of a back channel, and so they're discussing, you know, suspects' names who might not really be named as suspects or something like that. And they might be disclosing kind of non-public information that violates public records laws if it gets out.
Uh-huh. Actually, someone in the office here said that they heard on that Friday, April 19th, one officer, I'm presuming, saying to the other, you know, you're on the internet right now, you know,
exactly.
So be careful. Now, of course, the case has been made that the public should have access despite those risks. What is that case exactly?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's sort of kind of the longstanding tradition, is that, you know, local, you know, daily newspapers and radio programs and local news, you know, services will have access to the police scanner, and that they'll be able to listen in. And so when something major happens, they'll know to go there. And, you know, they normally don't beat the police, obviously. Mm. And, you know, the reporter I spoke with at the Colorado, and out of Fort Collins, Colorado, which is a city that has implemented encryption very recently, said that, you know, he ends up getting delayed by about a day on some stories just because he doesn't know, you know, that kind of a major, you know, prostitution bust or something like that has happened. So there is a delay in terms of when the public might find out about certain events.
We're talking about public access to police scanners following the Boston Marathon bombings and Dragnet in Watertown with Tim Murphy. He's a reporter for Mother Jones, also writes for Slate and the Washington Monthly. Well, I hadn't listened to scanners for years until Hurricane Sandy, when a Facebook friend posted a scanner feed, and I found it really mesmerizing. Why do you think they're suddenly popular again, and what do these scanner broadcasts offer that other news media may not?
I think they're much more immersed in what is actually going on. I mean, you're hearing, this is, you know, it's a primary source as opposed to, you know, a reporter on the ground or something like that. I mean, you're hearing from the people involved in the manhunt, and you're hearing, you know, you can hear their emotions. You can hear them, you know, start to get a little frazzled, or you can hear them get very excited. You can hear, you know, just kind of the immediate, you know, staccato of someone yelling "shots fired." I think that is kind of really alluring to a lot of folks who are kind of, you know, really immersed in a news story, you know, that's as captivating as the marathon manhunt.
There's no current federal regulations over the public use of scanners, despite some legislative attempts. How is encryption working there in D.C.?
You know, it's sort of, you know, the local news stations don't, you know, they haven't really gotten any access, and the you know, D.C. police don't, are indicating that they're not going to, you know, offer any sort of exceptions for news organizations, and so they're just sort of, you know, they're dealing with it. You know, they're not, you know, they're not going to get to the crime scene as fast or something like that. And, you know, D.C. has sort of compensated. You know, they've gotten better at sort of offering updates when something major has happened. You know, they give you a tweet, you know, that mm-hmm. something has happened at, you know, the 2000 block of X Street.
Well, I guess that's the point, though, isn't it, Tim? That, you know, that they can manage a tweet. They can decide on what they want to say in a Twitter feed, not necessarily on the scanner.
Right. So they have a much greater control of the flow of information than, you know, they previously did.
Well, there is a point made by several commenters on your article. Pretty easy to crack encryptions like the ones that they're using in D.C. or in Phoenix, for that matter. But for the armchair user, encryption would probably be a preventative, a barrier. Now, could there be a tipping point, though, that some things are allowed to be on the scanner, some things are not? And then how is that managed?
Yeah, and they're sort of experimenting with that a little bit. You know, so Fort Collins, for instance, gives access, limited access to the newspaper, but not to other folks. And so the newspaper rents out a scanner for about $100 from the Fort Collins Police Department. And so there's kind of limited transparency there. Phoenix keeps some channels open, like very broad emergency channels, so that you'll hear when there's, you know, a tornado warning or something like that. But once there is a chase, once there is some sort of pursuit or manhunt, then the channel goes to encrypted. So they sort of go back and forth on that one.
Tim Murphy is a reporter for Mother Jones D.C. Bureau. His writing has also been featured in Slate and the Washington Monthly. Tim Murphy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.